Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
When Foxy Brown comes to town, all the brothers gather round, 'cause she can really shake 'em down.
Foxy lady, Foxy lady.
Have no fear, Pam Grier is here as Foxy. Foxy Brown.
Actually, Pam Grier is here. She's on the line to talk about her new memoir, Foxy, My Life in Three Acts. You may be most familiar with her as the Foxy lady who karate kicked her way to stardom in the 1970s. You may not know the story of the struggle behind her rise to fame. Good morning, Pam Grier.
Celeste, good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. You know, the thing that strikes me the most about your memoir is it is blunt and straightforward. I mean, you pull no punches. I mean, you clearly had a rough upbringing. You had some very loving and supportive people in your life, most notably your mother. But you also talk very openly about having been raped twice, once at the age of 6 and another time at the age of 18. You talk a lot about the racial persecution that you dealt with growing up. Was that a difficult thing to do as you sat down to write this?
Absolutely. I drank a lot of wine and I padded a room. But I felt
I love that. That's great.
But I felt that I had so many lessons learned that I could share at this time, and we have an emotional economic crisis happening not only in our country but in the world. But there's so many, you know, I was given a lot of knowledge by my peers before me who opened doors for me and shared their lives and hardships, such as Lena Horne, and I can go on. And I felt compelled to share, because I continue to see, you know, behavior, negative behavior, abusive behavior being passed from family to family, generation to generation, when we do have access to therapy and help. So we really need a wellness in our family and in our lives. And I get my professionalism, my foxiness, my womanhood from my peers, from my community. And when I see it struggling, I felt I must say something so that others can see what I have gone through and possibly find a way to navigate to wellness and to better health and just find a place where it's a healing place that we need so desperately right now.
Well, let me read you something from your book. This is during the time when you were dating Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He had just converted to Islam, and you were trying to decide if you were going to do the same. And this is what you said. He told you, "I'll take care of you. You don't need an education." And you say, "Those five little words, 'I'll take care of you,' which so many women wait their whole lives to hear, did not impress me. In fact, they sent a cold chill up my spine. I knew plenty of women, friends of mine and my mother's, who were supposedly being taken care of until the man divorced them and left them with nothing but a brood of kids and a load of bills." This seems to be kind of a running theme in your book. Over and over, you turn down men romantically, you turn down certain job opportunities, you turn down things and say yes to other things because you seem to be constantly choosing empowerment.
Well, or I flail. It was a part at a time of the women's movement, first of all, when I began dating Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was converting to Islam. And not probably many of our listeners understand that Islam is not a monolithic community. It is diverse, where it has from very moderate to very conservative to very fundamental sects. And at the time, Kareem hadn't given me a plan of what life will we have. Is it moderate? Is it conservative? Will it be radical? And at the time, I just really couldn't give over my life to someone who could say, you know, because you have to understand, Islam is 14th centuries of a dogma, a legacy that from a Western perspective is unfair to women, but from an Eastern perspective, their perspective, it's traditional. And I didn't have enough time to deliberate, to embrace it as he had. And I really either needed more time, and I may not have gone with him, or I had taken maybe another year and found something that I could embrace and find solace and happiness. But here again, in that particular realm, he was dictating, you know, offering
right.
me love. He could take it away. He can offer
right.
me a life and take it away. And I felt compelled not to be unempowered.
And you decided to pursue
time.
Your education as well. One other thing that you say during this time is that you started to make your very first movie. And you say you didn't make a distinction at that time between A, B, or C movies. A movie was a movie, you said. I'm wondering if that changed when the films became known as blaxploitation films. Did that change your view of them?
No, it never changed. Because that's how I approach my work, which is how I got into the business, from being a film student to an actor, which I had no craft. I was a novice, and Roger Corman made sure I found the right books and literature to train me, because I told him, I said, I can't be fired, Roger. I'm leaving three jobs to do this film for tuition. And
you worked with Corman. Man, that is so cool.
It's very cool. He supported so many up-and-coming film students who were just graduating from USC, which was Francis Coppola, Steven Spielberg, Jonathan Demme.
Well, you're in a pantheon. We got to go pretty quick, but Pam Grier, I just have one question for you about your career. Who's more fun to work with, Quentin Tarantino or James Brown?
Oh my God!
Maybe it's Richard
Quentin
Pryor.
Tarantino. I owe him at least a child. He invested 2 years of his life to write Jackie Brown for me. How humbling is that?
Okay, we're going to actually go out on a song from Jackie Brown, Pam Grier, singing.
I love it.
Thank you so much for joining us. The name of the book is Foxy, My Life in Three Acts by Pam Grier.
Like a bad disease.